There you go. Wait 6 months to get your email read, and we have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
Everybody, welcome back to Brainstorm Brewery. I'm Corbin Hostler. I'm joined by Jason Ault and Douglas Johnson. I know you guys missed me last week while I was gone.
Nobody missed you.
Everybody missed me, man. I had to stay at home with my kid. My wife was out of town for the weekend. It was the first time I've done overnight at all without my wife and with our son. So,
like ever?
In the last 9 months, you've never done an overnight?
Nope. In the last 10, he does not sleep well during the night at all.
That sucks,
it's usually a team effort just to get to the morning, which can be pretty rough. But, yeah, so it was the first time I kept him overnight by myself. The house was a complete mess when I got home or when my wife got home, but the kid was still breathing, so I feel like I did my job.
My kid is such a good sleeper, I actually don't want to have another one. Because, like, how do you not subconsciously take that out on the kid? Daddy, you were drunk and did pick me up at soccer practice. Yeah, you didn't sleep as well at night as your sister. That's why Daddy drinks.
It has
Daddy,
been.
You can't say motherfucker to a 3-year-old. Father of the year. That's me. Whatever.
It's been a little rough. There's definitely been some pretty bad nights.
Knock those listeners out early. Just get those people unsubscribe already.
Hey, I want everyone to know that we occasionally get some feedback on some of our episodes. I got some feedback from some people that thought I was a little harsh on the last episode. I want everyone to know that we respond. We take our listener feedback very seriously, provided they're a Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery and subscribe to our page, give us $10 a month. That's all. Then I'll listen to what you have to say.
So if you want
$10 a month,
and that doesn't even guarantee that he'll act upon it either. Yeah.
Real feedback, direct any real feedback to me at chosler, chosler88 on Twitter. If you actually want your feedback to be heard and not just laughed at.
No, we take our Patreon's feedback very seriously. Okay. We don't want them to stop giving us money. So if you're a Patreon,
Jason is trolling, but if you do have feedback, we do want to hear it
from our Patreons.
Yep, that's
so
it.
Let's speaking of Patreons, guys, we were overwhelmed by the amount of email feedback from our brand new Patreons, and since we hit one of our goals,
our only goal,
we need new goals. Email us new goals.
Yeah, email us some goals. We'll do the goals.
We hit 300 per month, which is actually,
that's way more than I would have expected, so we really appreciate it, everybody.
We're a finance podcast. I'm still sort of like, I don't know, man. We'll do whatever you guys want. You want us to, like, review sleeves and make popper decks and face off? Whatever. Whatever you guys, you tell us how to make the podcast from now on, I guess. we hit a goal, so we're going to read just all of the emails today. Yep. We're just,
yeah, we got a lot of emails.
This is a mailbag.
Mailbag.
Mailbag episode.
Mailbag number one. This is an email from me to the cast. It's Wizards did not ban any cards in Standard, so learn to beat copycat. Don't whine about it. The end.
What do you guys think would have been the fallout had they done more bans? Had they said, hey, we really screwed up with Smuggler's Copter, and we really screwed up putting Emrakul and you know, a way to cheat Emrakul into play in back-to-back blocks. It was really thoughtless of us. So what we're going to do is go ahead and make another gigantic mistake that we have to ban our way out of. What do you think the fallout would have been from them banning some part of the copycat combo?
Would have been a disaster. I think when you have
worse than it feeling a little bit boring right now, because I think people are sort of a little bit bored, sort of like, yeah, copycat or some sort of vehicles thing.
Well, here's the thing. Right now, Standard allegedly, according to the top pros, is Mardu vehicles or four color copycat. Those are the two decks you can play if you want to win a tournament. Green black green constrictor is still a deck. It's a very good deck. At times, it's been the best deck on a weekend, but it's, you know, theoretically not the best deck overall. But now this Teemer Dynavolt Tower deck has sort of been rising up, and that's one of the things the Wizard cited. I don't know. Even a three-deck standard format at the pro level, at the top level, this far into it, is sort of... I mean, that's what you're going to get. And Brian Bronduin wrote a really good article on TCG Player about this last week. You know, everyone wants to blame Wizards for it, and sure, that's fine. But we have more people playing Magic than ever before. We have more information spread than ever before. We have more deck lists than ever before for Magic Online. All people have to do is iterate with what's doing well on Magic Online. And they don't. Stuff gets solved so quickly. This four-color copycat deck, remember coming out of the set, everyone was like, oh, Jeskai copycat, Jeskai copycat. And four-color was like, oh, this weird four-color deck. And now it's the best deck. And that's fine. That's evolution of the format. But 5 years ago, that evolution would have taken 6 months or something. And now it happens in a month. And then standard's going to feel stale. Like, it's really easy to just blame Wizards. And obviously, they deserve blame for many things when it comes to this, like Copter and Emrakul and Marvel and not seeing copycat combo from the beginning.
Wait, Corbin, we have to edit that out, because if Wizards hears you talking shit about them, then they're going to cut your paycheck.
That's a good point.
So we got to...
I'm sorry, I need to show harder.
Yeah.
You need to shill harder, my bad.
I'm just trying to look out for you.
Yeah,
buddy.
That's a good point. Thank you.
You're so bad at shilling, though.
The thing is, this is what you get in 2017. I know you guys. In 2017, with the proliferation of information the way it is, this is what you can get. You can't expect much better than a 3.5 deck format. To be honest, I mean, people will look at, oh, this format 4 years ago, there were like 5-6 different decks. Well, yeah, 5-6 years ago, there wasn't the amount of pressure being put on standard that there was now, because you had a group of loosely connected pros get together for 4 days before a pro tour and play it, and that was it. And now you have more teams than ever before that are taking things seriously. You have more hardcore Magic Online grinding than ever before, and really distilling data down to its bare points. It's just... there's only so much you can do. And if Wizards had banned something again right on the heels of a previous banning, it would have not just been when they banned Affinity, oh, things are really bad. When they banned Jason Stoneforge, things are really bad. When you ban Copter and Emrakul and Reflector Mage, that's a bad point, right? And that happens every 5 years, and that's fine. But if you follow that up immediately with, this deck is pretty good in standard, we're going to ban a piece of it, 6 weeks later... That would have absolutely destroyed consumer confidence. Not to mention, there's a lot of people who paid $20 a piece for their Saheelis. You know, it just, you can't do that to your player base. And I think they recognize that, and probably internally were just, you know, happy that they dodged a bullet, that it didn't have to be banned since they didn't even catch it in testing.
Word.
Yeah.
Emails.
Get to emails. All right, so this is one from Marcus Roth, one of our Patreons at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. I have two questions for the mailbag. This email was on March 8th, by the way, so right a week ago. If you were me listening to the Brew Crew and sub-guest DJ, what would you recommend your listeners actually take action on? Would you buy 10 of every pick of the week religiously and put them in a box and sit and wait, or would you be more strategic? If so, how? Follow-up, if I am a store owner, how do you store your decent specs?
Sub-guest DJ.
A binder. Yeah. Random bookshelf space, ? P.S. MTG Finance Feat of Strength idea. DJ has to acquire an MM17 box and, using only its contents and the cards he trades for, trade up to a Time Twister. Nope. Not doing that.
What? That was a good one.
I literally wrote an article on why Pact of Power sucks and no one should do it anymore.
Yeah, that's why it's a great challenge.
Yeah.
Because it makes you go against everything you believe in.
Oh, my God. I'll just do, like, an extra push-ups or something. I don't know.
Okay, buddy. To answer your question, as far as picks of the week, I think it's important to remember our pick of the weeks here. Because if you were to go buy 10 of every pick of the week, you know, that's whatever, 4 times 3.
A really bad idea.
A lot of picks of the week. I think it's important to know that our picks of the week sort of appeal to a bunch of different groups, right? Sometimes we make a pick of the week that's really good for the long-term commander player who wants, to throw something in a box. Sometimes I make standard picks, or we make modern picks, like the dredge picks from Grand Prix Dallas a while back, like Ravenous Trap, that sort of thing. you know, if you're the sort of person who stays on top of that sort of stuff, and or maybe you're somebody who gets access to bulk and can pull that stuff out and know to hold on to it rather than just buy list it, that pick's for you, right? Not every pick, I think, is for every player.
Yeah, and I think certain picks should be evaluated. Like, all of our picks have different confidence levels, even if we don't use a numeric scale. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes we might, like, we're forced to make a pick of the week every week, and we're not always going to have the best pick. We're not always going to have, like, the Saheelis, or we're not always going to have the Emrakuls of the set, just because we have to come up with something every week. And sometimes it's just like, this might get some sort of support eventually.
No,
like,
no.
A lot of
no,
my.
That's not to say we don't know what we're talking about.
It's just sometimes they have long windows, you know?
Yeah.
Or they're low downside. You know, they're low downside picks, but it's not necessarily pressing that this is where you go
sure.
spend your money, you know?
No, that's what I mean. Like, a lot of my picks have been, like, Mirror Superior, Heartless Summoning, Necrotic Ooze, whereas just, like, there's no reason for this to go up right now, but I'd rather have 100 of these when they print that one card that makes this
right.
be 1,000 times more.
So, yeah.
And, like, those aren't something you go out and buy every week, but... It's
what we're doing is we're making suggestions that that are going to resonate with people. I'm going to say Douglas is going to say something that's low risk, high reward, like Heartless Summoning. And it's going to go from like a dollar to like $11 or something stupid like that. And you're going to be like, wow, I had like six of those in a box. Or maybe I spent $20 on those and now I'm feeling real good about it. Or maybe I'll say something that I think is going to go up just because I think EDH players are going to pay attention because a new deck archetype comes along or something like that, and it's going to go up. Or Corbin's going to say, hey, this is getting played in modern sideboards. So what we're trying to do is have a bunch of different classes of picks for a bunch of different classes of people. You're going to hear something that's just going to resonate with you. You're like, man, that's really compelling. You know what? I think I'll go wager $30 or whatever. I wouldn't buy everything because not everything is for you, and you're not... Some people are like, hey, having a bunch of copies of this to play with in the meantime isn't a good consolation for me. Or having to sit on this for 3 years isn't a good consolation for me.
Right.
So
yep.
I basically pick what works for you. What are your goals? Are you trying to make standard cheaper? Are you trying to build an EDH deck? Or are you trying to have like a long-term portfolio? And I think once you hear the right pick for you, it'll make sense to you. It'll stick out, and that'll be the one you go in on. So you can basically just wait until you hear something that sounds really compelling to you. I wouldn't buy everything. I would buy the picks that are for you.
All right. To address the second point, I just have a spec box I keep at my house. It's real easy. It's like a 1K box, you know, and I've got 600-700 cards in there, right? So
yeah, I've got 2 1K boxes, and it's just alphabetized, and I use like penny sleeves to keep 12 of each card in there. So like I can keep I just write like a Sharpie, like, oh, I've got like 12 Glistener Elves in this one, 12 Glistener Elves in this one.
Do you write down the price you got them at?
No, I don't do that.
Okay, because you probably have the same thing as me where they just come out of boxes and we hold them.
I'm not going to calculate the exact price point I got each of those Glistener Elves at.
Some of them were free.
I'm not... Most of them were free.
But yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea for people who, like if you're trying to spec on Modern or Standard or whatever, you actually go to TCG
Player. Yeah, if you're buying stuff off TCG
Player
and you care about records and all that stuff, like it's not a bad idea to just put a sticky note on each thing. Like, oh, I got all these at $1 a piece.
Yeah. And you know what? I have a box of shame, and then I've got my spec boxes, and man, my box of shame hits every once in a while.
Oh, I've got my Splinter Frights, man. Never forget.
Never forget. My seances are in my box of shame. The card is so good that they reprinted it. Like, that's how good it is.
Yep.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Faith's Reward is my big dagger.
Actually,
recently.
All my seances are free, so even if I bulk them out, I still make a surprising amount of money. Because I've already broken even and kept a bunch of cards.
You know, Seance was the 16th top sold card on TCG Player last week.
I mean, I'm not surprised. Like, honestly, Bouchard, not on this podcast, I guess, but Bouchard was saying that card actually might even go up just because more people are going to pay attention to it.
It's not.
Once they play it in limited. So
it's
that's
not.
His pick of the week. Yeah.
Okay, it's not. It was selling well because Saffron Olive did a deck with it at the end.
When he broke it, I remember.
I mean, yeah, the deck was whatever, but that's why it moved. That's why it was moving. It's not like the price moved.
Now, I really think that's my pick of the week. Go buy Seance at its current price.
Hit us with a new email.
This one's from Robert Zasek. Zasek.
Okay.
Jesus, dude. Really?
Z-A-C-E-K.
Is he a Patreon?
Butcher it.
You can screw up a non-Patreon's name.
Butcher it.
How many of you guys or anyone you know of looked to see if there's a correlation between how high a card is priced before release, how low it goes once released, and how much it goes back up before the next set starts getting preview cards? Wait a month, dude.
I almost don't. I'm gonna be honest, I don't play that game.
There's no reason for us to, like, do correlations or data or, like, percentage points. Just, like,
it's also random. And I know people don't want to hear that there's not some secret formula. And, you know, sometimes you hit, but, man, standard, people don't understand just how fickle standard is. You look at a metagame and you're like, man, Winding Constrictor is so strong. Walking Ballista is so strong. How could they have ever printed these cards? And then you don't realize all it takes is one thing. And you see it sometimes after a ban or a rotation. Cards that were just everywhere in the previous standard are just unplayed regardless of power level. You know, Walking Ballista is a great card, yeah, but if Saheeli combo wasn't a thing everyone had to worry about and it wasn't an onboard answer to it that you could play on turn two, the card would not – it may or may not look like it, you know. It would not be, for instance, in the Mardu Vehicles deck, right? And people don't understand – just how fickle standard is as to what hits. There are some cards that are just so powerful that they just don't fit in the format. And they might in a different year, but they don't thin, right? So it's just so hard to play the – you can't look at
– I mean, you can pick cards level that are, like, super, super obvious and, like, oh, this card's – it's like Advent of the Worm is a fun one from RTR. Like, when that card was spoiled, everyone lost their minds because it was a 5/5 flash for 4 mana in a set with Populate, and then it did nothing.
Well, it won a Pro Tour.
Remember the $30 Scab Ruinators?
I'm talking price-wise, though.
Yes, you're right. Price-wise, it did nothing, I think. Maybe it hit a few dollars, but it didn't go up, really.
Yeah.
So there's no correlation. There's no data to be had here. It's just, like, I mean, the only safe bet, I guess, is, like, there's a Planeswalker tax. Don't pay
it. That's the only thing that we've ever noticed an actual effect on.
But that's,
plus, like, the fluctuations are small enough to get wiped out by things like shipping and how long you have to wait to get your cards.
Yeah, I mean, there's just playing that standard game is hard. And, you know, I tried it with, this time around, with Aethers for a Harvester. And honestly, that's a pretty good example because it was, like, $4 or something when I called it. And it topped out at $6 for a minute. So technically I saved you money if you wanted to pick them up. But there's plenty of worlds where that card spiked to $10 and you double up on it. And it is very heavily played. But it's just its play didn't start until about 2 weeks too late. You know, it didn't spike at the Pro Tour. Its play, how much it was played, spiked about 2 weeks later as the format evolved. So the playability that I predicted got there, but the price didn't just because of when that happened and how much supply there was. Whereas if that same thing had occurred, if the level of play I foresaw happened at the Pro Tour instead of 2 weeks later, it would have hit $10. So that's what I mean. It's just so fickle that it's really hard to draw a lot of correlations.
We're not wimping out on answering the question because it's too hard. It's just there's no point in doing any of that.
Yeah. All right. Hit us with a new one.
This one's from Earl O'Connor Jr. He is a Patreon, just so everyone knows. Hey, Brew Crew and guest. I was wondering when you guys take a card that is in your personal collection and decide when it is time to sell it. Also, how many decks do you have at a given time across all formats? I only play EDH and I have 16 decks, but I'm beginning to feel like it's too much.
Too much?
This is a dangerous question. I will rip cards out of my decks to sell them to people at the store if they need them.
Oh, yeah. I took apart apart my only Legacy deck to sell singles.
If you're selling, like, if you're declining selling cards because they're in your personal collection, like, you got to figure out how often you
now,
play
the one,
them, though.
Yeah,
like,
I do have an exception, and it's the one thing I do sort of call my own personal stuff. I have, you know, my expensive binder of my set of duels and my bazaars and whatever, you know, all that, like, fancy expedition piles, all that stuff that's worth a lot of money. And I do occasionally sell cards out of it, but that's the one thing where I will just sometimes tell people, no, it doesn't matter what you're paying me. No, it does matter. But, like, it does.
Really?
If you're paying me market price for it, I'm not selling this to you because I just won't have – I'm not going to find another one, you know, without buying it myself.
I think there's only, like – a few dozen cards in my personal collection that I'm never selling. I have a playset of Birds of Paradise altered to be the three legendary birds from Pokemon plus Lugia.
Hey, I'm not there, so can you give yourself a wedgie?
I have a place out of Ravnica foil life from Alum, signed by Therese Nielsen.
Oh, go away. Give your... Ravnica.
What?
You disgust me.
What would you play?
No, I would call it Ravnica because that's what the set is named.
Also, Ravnica Birds?
I actually don't know what set they're from because they're like they're altered.
Are they from... Are they a Mark Poole?
No, they're for, they're like new art.
Ooh, the Ravnica art. Guess you're art. Wrong then, huh? Guess you're wrong.
Okay.
The birds, come on.
Don't... They're birds. Oh my god, bully yourself.
I don't even... Honestly, I don't even stop at ripping my decks apart. If someone needs a card up front and I don't have it, I'll just run back into the store where I know most of the regulars. I'll be like, give me this card right now and I'll give you one in 2 days. Just take yep. other people's decks apart. And then I hook them up when I give it back to them or whatever, right? But... Yeah, so you know, as far as decks, I have four completed modern decks, I believe. I have Living End, I have Merfolk, I have Lantern, I have Immercal deck, and I have Dredge like 90% built. I have five commander decks, and that's it.
I tore apart everything but EDH. I don't have any commander decks on my decks or EDH.
This is your one chance to get like 2 minutes to talk about the current vintage deck you have, so make it count.
Okay, so when people talk about proxies on like the EDH subreddit and stuff like that, I'm like, hey, I got an idea. How about you stop being a poor and go buy cards? That's how I feel about it. I'm not a big fan of proxies. However, I'm also not inclined to drop $30,000 on a vintage deck so I can play in one tournament on a Saturday. So what I did was, since it's a proxies allowed tournament, proxy guy on Twitter. I think it's the proxy guy on Twitter.
It is. It always messes me up.
Yeah, I'm typing in proxy. I'm like, he blocked me, that fuck! It's the proxy guy on Twitter. He made a deck and he made a custom expansion symbol with like my face as a comedy mask. It's basically the best thing ever. So while I'm sort of like, hey, buy cards, this is a special case where I'm just not going to go on Money Draft and drop $30,000 on a deck for one weekend. So I am going to play in a proxy tournament with proxies, but. If you have to play with proxies, play with sexy proxies. I got no Sharpie on basics here. Nothing but custom foils. And deck looks real great. So I guess I will count that. But none of these cards are for sale. Never buy or sell proxies. If someone gives them to you as a gift so you can do something like that, that's one thing. Don't ever buy or sell proxies.
Yep.
Ever.
As for how many decks I own, I have Savra, which is the first EDH deck I ever built. I have Marchesa, and I'm in the process of defoiling that just because I'm at the point where I just don't really care that much about foiling every deck. I just want to have one deck look really nice. I took apart my several thousand dollar Child of Alara deck because I don't play EDH enough to justify owning it. And then I have a bulk rare only Heartless Hidesugu deck that I play casually, and I don't even play it casually. I haven't played that in 6 months either, but that one I don't mind having together just in case I do play it in the future. But so I have four decks, and you have 16. So I don't know how often you play those 16 decks, Earl, but
I think 16 is probably on the high end.
I mean, other than those people who build like one of every color combination, they have like 30 something or whatever.
I do think not enough.
Okay. To be honest, though, it depends what you want and what you want to have tied up in it, because there's a difference too, right? I mean, he may be tied this.
I mean, if you have $200 invested in each of those decks, then it's less than like having 16 of my Child of Alara decks.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, let's say he's got it. Yeah, if he's got the $50 slightly souped up precon, that's fine. Whatever, you're not losing much. But if all your decks are full of fetches and stuff like that, then. Yeah, at some point you're tying a bunch up, but it's all what you're comfortable with.
If your kid doesn't have braces because of your EDH decks, then maybe reevaluate your life. But
I just don't. 16 is so many, man. That's like, hey, how do you decide what to play? How do you carry them all? So many questions.
If you got 16 decks, I think you big deck your friends, and you're like, yeah, we're playing in my house.
All right, give us an email.
This one's from Peter O'Connor. Not sure if there's any relations there, but they're also a Patreon. Hi, what is a fair price to offer on an LP Guru Mountain and Guru Plains when buying a collection? Obviously, they could eBay to get most of their value, so I don't want to screw them, but I don't want to pay full price. Merfolk are best in a frying pan.
Whoa!
Oh!
What?
Yeah, that's just a tag down to the end of the email, I swear
to
God.
I'm not answering your question, I refuse. You put them on a cedar plank and
I'm not answering this question.
You savage.
Pass. Pass. Hard pass. Sad. Wrong.
I think it's like 100. It's like close to 100 for the Guru Mountain,
no,
like a little over.
Why don't we come up with a formula for anything like that as opposed to giving them a number just on those?
Sure.
So the formula for something like that, he said it's LP?
Yeah, LP slash LP plus.
But it's so hard to find, so you're probably going to end up having to give them, like, if you try not to screw them, maybe between, probably closer to retail than buy list on stuff like that, right?
I was going to say 65, 70% of retail.
Yeah, 70 is, I was going to say.
Honestly, it depends on the rest of the. If it's part of a collection too, it depends on how you're buying it, right? Like,
yeah,
is this are you going to make some of that up in the rest of the collection and you can pay it? Because that's certainly a strategy. Hell, you can pay somebody 90% of their big card if they show you their bulk rares.
Yeah, if you
and you know their stuff
yada
there.
The rest of the collection.
Yeah,
I mean, and there's a lot. If you're dropping like, if this is like the lower end of the collection, like if you're dropping 4-5 digits on this collection and it's just part of it, then like, you deserve to pay a decent amount that allows you room to make money, right? Because you're probably one of the only people in the tri-state area that's dropping that much on their collection.
Exactly.
Like, you're saving them time from driving out to cool stuff or wherever they're near a store. Like, if this is a big collection, then like, you have a little bit more leeway to offer a little less just because you're doing the service of dropping that
right
much.
Yeah,
on
you
it.
Get you get paid a premium to eat their garbage.
I agree. And for the record, Merfolk top four again last weekend in the hands of Austin Grady. Shout out for the fish.
Hey, Corbin, going to need you to dial it way back.
I got it in. It's fine.
Story of your childbirth.
Merfolk. Email.
This one's from David Shum. David Shum, that's how I'm saying it. Hey, Brew Crew and Apprentice Brew Crew, parentheses DJ.
He knows who he is.
I love it.
The total number of Planeswalkers in the four major sets is staying about the same, and with no core sets, it means fewer reprints as they don't reprint Walkers in the new sets. This makes me think Walkers would be a better hold. At the same time, many are starting to bristle at the sheer volume of Walkers. We are seeing some get super cheap. This makes me be leery of speculating on them.
Yep.
What does the crew think about Walker finance going forward? You answered your own question,
yep.
Dave.
There are too many now.
There's way too many. It used to be a sort of a cute little thing to collect. Where you try to have every Planeswalker, and like, goddamn it, there's like six in every set now, because you're not even counting the intro decks. So like, people are not too excited about collecting every Walker. So there's $2 Walkers.
Keep the good ones
set,
though.
Like,
you keep the good ones.
Yeah, keep the good ones.
Like Cameo, for instance, is probably a good example. Like Obnixilus is like another generic 5-mana does stuff Planeswalker. Jason Raveler of Secrets is a generic ass Planeswalker. Cameo has a really freaking awesome ultimate ability that is manageable.
You're talking old Tameo, right?
No,
I'm
talking about new Tameo.
The guy that sang that song Word Up?
Tameo Field Researcher.
Oh, Tameo. I thought you were saying Cameo.
I would not. I think Tameo is a fine one to hold, right? Like, that card has this really sweet ability, and it even gets a little fringe play in a doubling season modern deck. Like, it's not, there's bad Kiora, you know, there's, like I said,
both Kioras are bad.
But one of them's better, but yeah, there's Obnixilus, it's whatever. New Jace even is whatever. There's lots of whatever.
Stay away from generic Planeswalkers,
yeah.
I guess, is your point. Like, stay away from the generic ones that it's like, plus one red spell, minus two murder, yeah. Like, yeah.
And that costs 5 mana, whereas Tameo is, like, kind of awesome in a lot of ways. You know, you're not like, oh, I have doubling season in my Atraxa deck. What I really want to do is play Obnixilus. You know, like,
yeah.
I actually don't even know if you can play Tameo in an Atraxa deck, but
you can. It's non-red.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, stay away from walkers unless they're, like, the really good ones or iconic ones.
Also,
like, Karn and Ugin are super good.
Also, wait. Because of they do, like, the dual decks, right? They have the intro decks, but they also have the dual decks because we got alternate versions of Nissa and Obnixilis. So the time to pick them up is definitely on rotation when you've dodged that reprint.
Yep, all that sounds good to me.
That was a pretty simple question. This one's got some words for all of us, actually. This one was sent 8 hours ago by Andrew Hewitt.
Okay.
Brew Crew, I write to praise Jason E. Alt, Lord of Salt, and would like to remind DJ that he's not a real cast member. Corbin, you gotta wait to the end to get your little shout out. When one card has multiple printings and the price between versions is over $1, is it more likely that the expensive version will come down or the cheap version to go up? Thanks for the advice and all the laughs, AJ Hewitt. P.S. Go eat a bag of fish dicks, Corbin.
Is that what they call fish sticks in, like, Europe? Is that a British thing?
Why do they have to be British, man?
Because they have weird words for stuff. Also, my wife and I were watching this Bake Off show tonight
also,
from BBC.
Also, Britain's not Europe. They Brexited.
That you're right, because they were Europe. Okay. Sure. They were before, you're right, but now they Brexited. No, I was watching a cooking show, a bake-off show with my wife tonight about people on BBC baking cookies and cakes, only they weren't called cookies and cakes. They have weird British names.
Biscuits and cakes.
Like, I'm pretty sure dicks is a, like, food in...
No, spotted dick is a sponge cake with some sort of detritus. I don't actually know what spotted dick is.
See? But that's what I was talking about. It's a thing,
man. Like, it's a garbage sponge cake, and then they pour that room temperature jizzy custard pudding.
Oh my god, I was right. I just Googled it. It is. It's a British pudding.
Yeah.
Yeah, pudding, so I wonder, dessert. I don't know how you can make those, I don't know how you can make those out of fish, though.
Pudding means dessert, it's not an actual pudding, it's a sponge cake. Yeah. So, I don't even remember his question, because you derailed us with your spotted dick nonsense.
When a card has multiple printings, and the price between, I think it means the difference in price between versions is over $1. Is it? Yeah, does the expensive one come down, or does the cheap one go up? Both, they converge.
Well, it really depends
if there's a compelling reason to buy one or another. If the art's terrible, like an FTV is not going to move the price of the expensive one to the extent that like a nice foil reprint's going to.
I would also say they follow it. There's some weird corner cases where like versions of Commander deck cards can get more expensive or Plane Chase ones or weird versions of printings can be more expensive. But in general, I would say whatever the most recent price movement was between those two cards is where it's going to go. So something like the Angel, Gisela, Red White Angel, when it was reprinted and whatever it was reprinted in, the old one is going to come down and they're going to converge because the new one started cheaper. But if it's different and say the new one comes out or the old one spikes or something, then the new one's going to follow that up or however, you know, however. A lot of times it's sometimes even the newer one spikes because it has a better art. And there's lots of people who when a card is $5, no matter what version you get, they'll pay for the new one because they want the modern border. But then when that one's $10 and the old one's $5, you know, now they suddenly decide they can buy the old one, right? So whatever the most recent price movement is the one I think that is more, you know, more likely to lead the way.
And it's weird sometimes, like the Arcane Denial is always the fun example because the Alliance one, there's 800 copies on TCG Player. They're like 10 cents a piece. Nobody wants like this. I think they're called the Sword and the Shield art for whatever reason. And then the Commander 2013 one is like $5 because it has a new border.
Yeah, that's the perfect
example.
And
people want to play it in like Nekusar and people want to play it in their Derevi deck or whatever, but it's $5 even though it's a... It's in the decks, like you could get.
It got reprinted in Commander 2016, so it's coming down. But yeah,
it's still like more expensive than the other one.
Yeah, but which is weird too, because and that's when I say there's so many corner cases because generally I would say the new one's $5. Surely the old one's going to rise up to meet it, but the old one is just so ugly, and no one wants it. Yeah. That it's actually an exception to that sort of rule because a lot of times that is true. Like Hercule's Recall was one where. The newer versions moved, and eventually the old ones, they didn't catch up, but they, you know, they sort of converged on it. But yeah.
Like I sell the fifth edition Hercules Recalls in the store for like $3, and then the Modern Masters ones are like $4.50. Right. And the guy was like, "Why is what's the difference?" And I was like, "Look at them. Which one do you like better?" He's like, "The Modern Masters one, exactly." Yeah.
Arcane Denial is the exception because it's so ugly.
Well, the fifth edition Hercules Recall is pretty bad too.
It is actually pretty bad. It's in fourth and fifth, and in there's a lot of ugly versions of that card. It's in revised even. All right, next one.
All right, this one's from Tyler D. Gresho. This one's pretty quick. So, should I try to trade/sell my Ulamogs or hold on to them? I don't need the money or cardboard, just want the best value. Thanks.
Trade them. I'm going to look real quick to double check that answer, but that's my gut. I know that they spiked quite a bit.
I think it's like 15. Yeah, I think it's like 15 or 16 still after the unbanning or after the Emrakul ban. But like if you don't need them, like just move them into stuff that you either want to spec on or move them into stuff that you can play with or
ship them.
Don't need the money, like you don't really need to sell them and lose a cut, but like
ship
just trade them into stuff.
Yeah, they're pretty stable right now at around that $15-16 price or whatever. So ship them. They'll probably be 10 at rotation, and then which point they may be a good pickup again, but
it just ship them. They're going to be on a downward trajectory at rotation. There's going to be stuff that's going to be on an upward trajectory around that time. Stuff that's going to hold value.
You
want to
turn one of these? You want to turn one of these into three Aethersphere Harvesters right now?
Or Lifecrafters, Bestiary, or like basically whatever you think is going to be a good hold.
Maybe. Yep. I don't love those cards either at the moment because they're both like.
Oh, Bestiary hit like bulky. Six, didn't it, or something stupid?
Wait, what?
I don't know. I got to look this up.
I thought that was like a bulk rare.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I thought it was like a $2
it's a dollar.
Card, like...
It's a dollar.
I hope so. I someone There's, told fuck
you
dude,
can
well,
you can buy
care.
42 of them for
the free release foil is six. Is that what you were looking at?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Right. I got confused in the old.
It's
noodle.
It's basically bulk and Aethersphere Harvester's on the way down just because there's so much of it. But basically, you want to take one now and turn it into two 6 months from now, and that's
also you
want to
look up the price of cards before you. Make any before you do anything based on what you thought you saw a card price.
All right, hit us with the next one.
We just got a new Patreon pledge 2 minutes ago while we were
exciting.
Talking. I just got the email while I had this open.
Hype.
All right, so that was the most, those were all the emails from the past week or so. So I'm gonna go back a little bit to February 10th.
Okay,
from about a month ago.
Help, oh, I'm locked in a basement. Please, God, somebody help me.
All I have is this email to send you your podcast an email. It's the only thing open on my computer.
All right, this is one from Brazil, from Luciano Maciel. I don't know. Luke Maciel.
I bet if you were a Pokemon, you'd nail the pronunciation of his name, nerd. Oh, this is from Lucario. All right.
Wait, I have a. How do you say
what?
How do you say Gyarados?
Me?
Yeah. You just told him
Gyarados.
Okay. No, that's how I say it. How
Why?
Do you say
how do, other...
how do you say Rattata?
It's Rattata. It's not Rattata. It's Rattata.
It's Rattata.
It's Rattata.
Oh my! It's Rattata.
Oh my God! It's not.
This is why I asked.
Rattata. I'm going to retaliate and kick you off the podcast. And it's Gyarados in Oklahoma. They got one of them Gyarados?
All right. Hey, guys. I'm Lucario, 30 years average player from Brazil and longtime listener of Brainstorm Brewery. Sending my first email, though I'm pretty sure that patrons get the priority on the reading queue. But anyway, just had to share a thought about standard R&D issues. I couldn't agree more on the statement that knowing all card interactions is their job, they can't miss on it. But something that came up to me is this. What's their motivation on doing the testing for future sets? I mean, when players get to know the cards and start testing, their goal is to take down a Pro Tour. I guess it took a couple minutes after Felidar Guardian was spoiled to read about the combo on Reddit. How it's possible that a team of professionals that work every day with it simply didn't see it coming. Probably because their payoff on the test isn't as high as a competitive player's winning prizes. You know, their employees in a big company and even being the most passionate and obsessed workaholics probably are thinking about their paychecks and bills to pay while shuffling their testing decks. To support that opinion, just search for the Sam Stoddard articles with glimpses of the decks tested by for them for past sets. Ooh, I remember one regarding BFZ that had lists similar to intro decks. Did they really think that was competitive enough? Although maybe the sudden changes to rotation got them by surprise too. Not about Saheeli combo because it's the same block and probably designed by the same guys, but starting with a Monket, we're going to have new interactions that probably weren't tested properly. I wonder if the new ban schedule has something to do with this. Best regards to you all and congrats on the show. It's getting better every week. Thanks for reading and sorry for my poor English. Your English is fine,
English is better than Corbin.
Your English is way better than most people in America.
It's funny because he said that. They actually did not catch... I also went on, like, said, no way they missed Saheeli and Felidar. It's right there. Splinter Twin existed. It's so easy to type these words into Gatherer and figure, or internal Gatherer, and figure out if there's any Splinter Twin combo. And then they were like, yeah, we missed it. And I was like, okay, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I like Lucario's sticking up for them. He's like, no, guys, they're not incompetent. They're lazy. Come on. Who wants to do their job?
I've heard
you're onto something.
I've had conversations with pros, and there is some opinion among some people that the current crop of R&D testers on the competitive level are not competitive enough. And they do, and it's not even a knock on people, but it is absolutely true that if you are not, say, testing for a pro tour, and even if you were a pro tour player, if you are no longer on that level or even close to that level, I mean, your skills naturally fall off, right? And especially in R&D, there's so much change in the cards and sets that the payoff is really low to spend a week putting a ton of work into a card and then just to have it, into a deck rather, and then just have something key to that deck get changed the next week or the next day, and you're like, well, now what do we do? They have so much that they have to try to test, and there's so many moving parts that it's really hard to catch stuff. So I don't know what their internal processes are. I don't, maybe they should, best deck of the week should maybe get some sort of internal benefit, right? Something to encourage it. I don't know. But I do know that, that the Imrakul Smuggler Excopter Heart of Kirin back-to-back-to-back should not have happened, right? Those cards are just dumb.
This is just pure speculation, but... is it true that, like, they haven't hired as many top pros in the past, like, 5 to 7 years as they used to?
I don't know.
Because, like, I know that we haven't seen as many, like, pros that we're used to following nowadays get sucked up by WotC. Like, I know that, like, Melissa DeToro was there for a while. Gavin wasn't, like, a top
Melissa,
level pro.
Melissa
but, like,
is back there. And Jerry Thompson also went through, a 6 or 12-month stint there.
Yeah.
In the past,
but, like, that
2 years.
That was, like... 4 or 5 years.
In the past 2 years.
Okay.
I
didn't know Melissa was, like, back there again.
Yeah, so it's, but those are two people, right? And Jerry's not even there anymore, right? So we really don't know. They obviously have very, very, very good players. Some of the best players who ever play the game are still within those walls testing. I think
best players from 10, 15 years ago is my point.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. I also, if I were saying we need to fix this because our decks don't look like the real world, I would look at some of the processes for their testing before I would look at the testers themselves.
Sure.
I think there's a lot there. Plus, it goes back to the conversation earlier about, does standard get solved so fast? I mean, they simply... the amount of manpower, even if they have, say, a dozen people working on it for 3 months or whatever, and that they do nothing but do that in Wizards R&D, that's equivalent to, like, 48 hours of the general public having access to the set. There's only so much they can do.
Yep. All those monkeys on typewriters in 3 months can't discover something that it took 20 million Magic players on Twitter.
That is...
15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that particular one is unforgivable, but... well, I mean, maybe forgivable, because it seems to be turning out okay, but it is, I think, if I'm someone's boss there, that you have to catch that.
Honestly, as much of a screw-up as that is, the format's still a little healthier than it was when we had Squadron Hawk running around, so...
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Copkin.
Not many people are around today who remember that.
Oh, like, that was it. Was that day? That was the deck you played. It was it.
Okay.
Cobblade was.
If you didn't play Magic back during that block, let me give you this picture. If you're on mono red, right? And you're against that deck, and you started with Mountain, Triple Goblin Guide, two other spells, you would lose to that deck.
Because
you're talking about
Cobblade?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have Stoneforge or Battersports.
Like, mono red had Goblin Guide, Searing Blaze, Lightning Bolt, and it would lose consistently to this deck.
Well, everyone knows what Stoneforge Batterskull does, so, right?
Not everyone. Everyone knows the deck list, but they don't know how powerful that deck list is.
It's the same people who are like, Stoneforge would be fine in Modern. No.
I know, right?
No. It's weird because that was a one deck format until Splinter Twin got printed, but it was actually a good format by, quote, good players.
The matchup was incredibly skill testing.
Yeah, this Cobblade matchup was actually super interesting and skill testing. And then when Splinter Twin came out, before Splinter Twin just got jammed into Cobblade when it was its own blue-red deck, that was also a super interesting format. Because before, if you could jam a Jace through on turn four, you'd win the game. Because you'd play the Mind Sculptor, and under the old Legend rules, you couldn't play your own Mind Sculptor, would just remove theirs. So they would always be up at least a Brainstorm on you. But once Splinter Twin got printed, and I played it Twin at an Invitational to a top 16 finish, your opponent would tap out on turn four for Jace, and you'd be like, okay, Exarch Twin, you're dead. But that's another example of people not figuring it out, because that was like 2 or 3 weeks after the set released. I went to an Invitational, top 16, and people weren't prepared for Splinter Twin. You know, like, today, Felidar Guardian and Saheeli Rai, by the time the set has released, have not only been discovered, there's three different deck lists and sideboard plans for them all. It's just a much different environment.
You okay over there, Corby?
Yeah, I was trying to hold back a cough while I finished talking.
Yeah, I called you Corby.
Anyways, this is the other sort of thing that a lot of pros have talked about, and I agree with. The issue that they've had in recent sets, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, is not necessarily bad design or bad combos. It's even when there are different decks, because we've had Pro Tours over the past year even, we've had 6 decks top 8, and then the format still becomes dull. It's that, and this was a Smuggler's Copter problem, and it's the Gideon problem. They haven't banned Gideon. A lot of decks start to look the same. It doesn't matter if they're different decks, if it's still turn 2 Smuggler's Copter, turn 4 Gideon over and over. They're pushing individual cards so much because they need, you know, flagship cards to sell the set. Imrakul and Eldritch Moon, Gideon in BFC, Smuggler's Copter to sell vehicles in Kaladesh, that, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Marvel or Black Green Delirium, you're still getting Imrakuled on turn 5. And it was, they're making individual, pushing individual cards so much, and the power level of those cards is so, so far removed from the rest of the format since we're not getting Llanowar Elves anymore, that, you know, even if there's multiple decks, they all play 12 of the same card or 8 of the same card, and all the games feel the same. And in my opinion, that's the bigger issue with Standard right now than anything else.
Is it, though?
Right. It is a good point.
Come on, Jason. You can't just say, is it, though. You gotta beat him up for those ex-listeners.
Give me a counterpoint.
You gotta really razzle Corbin's feathers to support those non-listeners.
You razzle
get
feathers?
Him back on.
Is that the verb?
I don't think that's almost certainly not a thing. Razzle dazzle.
Give him the old
razzle
dazzle in his feather right. piece.
Give us an email.
We're going back even farther now. This is from December of 2016.
Has this person since become a Patreon?
Probably not.
Sometimes your emails don't get read for 4 months. We're sorry.
Well, I mean, we did hit our $200 goal, which says that we will start doing mailbag episodes, where even if you're not a Patreon, we can
send the emails.
Emails,
so. Emails are good.
Yeah, emails are good. We'll get to the Patreon one sooner, at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery, but, you know. This is from Vicky Knower. "Hey guys, I really enjoy the episodes where you have more of a direction or get more specific on one topic during the cast. You mentioned you were looking for ideas, and I've always wondered how the Judge Foil finance game works. How do you expect a card to perform based on whether it's a Modern, Legacy, or EDH card? What cards like Mana Drain will stay expensive, and which ones like Shardless Agent will be trash? Why did Ravagers of War stay the same for a while, then suddenly drop in price so drastically? Thanks for the entertainment and finance tips, Vicky." So Judge Foils, guys.
It really depends on how much of their price is predicated on scarcity. And, like, for example, the Shardless Agent went down just because it got reprinted elsewhere also, and, like, the cheapest version is what the people that played those formats got. So
I think the Judge promos are overpriced when they first come out. Look at Mana Drain or Force of Will or whichever one it was. We've actually seen some big drops in some of them. I think especially when they're highly desirable, they come out and they're given out at conferences or whatever. And I think they come out overhyped a little. Not overhyped, but just the people who want them because they're high-end collector's items to begin with really want them, and they pay for them. And then you sort of get a more settled price later.
This one's interesting for me because I recently priced out my Child of Valara deck, and I was really surprised to see that my foil Vampiric Tutor, the Judge foil, was like half of what it was when I got it.
Yep.
And it's an old border Judge foil, which I expected to hold value really well. I got it at like $100 and something, and now I looked at it and like the TCG low is 50 something. I'm like, what? So, I mean, I know it got the EMA printing, and I know a lot of people liked the EMA art, but like, I didn't expect the Judge foil to be like the same price or lower than the Eternal Masters foil, because the EMA is like 80.
Yeah, and the Elesh Norn has come down too. It was $600-$700, and now it's like $500-$550. Or 550, I guess, is probably the better price. Like, it's just, you know, I think that they're not as they're a safe place to park money after a while. Like, you know, you get your Elesh Norn now, that's fine, but be wary of them when they first come out. Do we have any more, DJ?
Emails?
Yeah. Like, that are within the last few months?
There's one from November.
let's read that and then wrap.
All right, so now we're really getting back in terms of months. This is from Knife City Alchemist at knifecityalchemist@gmail.com. Hey guys, I love the cast. Look forward to it every week. You guys were more than welcoming in Vegas, and I appreciated it. In one of your episodes, you guys talked about how the EV of a box keeps the card prices in that set in check. How does that apply to MTGO, especially with the new changes to Redemption? And by new changes, they mean the changes back in, like, September.
Patreons get their emails read a week later or 8 hours later. Oh, sorry if you are a Patreon.
I don't think this person's a Patreon. I'll check.
I like how we're calling it Patreons when it's clearly Patron.
You know what? We can call them whatever we want because
that's a good point.
We own them.
Non-Patreons are the scourge of our existence.
I'm just going to let that, because you're baiting us.
Jesus.
You're not going to retaliate at me?
I'm going to be honest. I don't know a ton about Magic Online. I don't think that the same principle applies because, you know, the whole concept of it is that they go out of print and paper and dealers can't get anymore. But it wasn't really dealers buying them from Wizards or whatever distributors directly in the first place anyways and Magic Online. So I don't think it compares. Like, obviously, Redemption and stuff like that is a much more... I think the price of Redemption, once you calculate in the shipping costs and all the whatever costs they tack onto it, is going to determine more about the set value. And I do think that that matters because what... Right, the whole thing is back in the day, if the price of the set in paper was X, but the price to redeem it was lower, people would just buy it online and redeem it and sell it in paper. And then they upped the shipping, you had to include the shipping in that, et cetera. And that's still sort of a thing. But now I think they have increased the costs so that that isn't really a viable route anymore for people to take. So I honestly don't know, you know, how it sort of shakes out these days.
There you go. Wait 6 months to get your email read, and we have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
I mean, it's there's a lot of people who know a lot about Magic Online. I'm not one of them.
Yeah,
I've never bought a card on Magic Online or anything, so I'm not sure how it works.
We should get a Magic Online person for our first person.
We should at least have a someone online to guess or to guess who knows a lot about it and go deep on Magic Online. That would be a good idea. I'm in. Boom.
Word.
Idea sparked from your email. So we'll get somebody on to talk about Magic Online and get deep into that stuff. We've done it in the past.
Let's make JR do it because I know he doesn't want to.
We've done it in the past. We had on the owner of a large chain of bots and had a pretty interesting discussion. So I think it might be a good one to follow up on.
Maybe someone from like Card Hoarder or something.
Card Hoarder would be good.
Or Wizard Tower.
You're just like dropping names now.
Yep, I am.
All right. Well, anything else you guys want to drop in before we go?
No.
Okay. No. All right. Well, everybody.
No break in bulk. No pick of the week. It's
mailbag. No. Timeless. Listen to it a year from now. See how dumb we were. But everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for the Patreon contributions. We'll certainly do our best to continue putting out a product that you can at least suffer through on your drive to work. So
send us ideas for goals as well, because we had that one $200 a month goal, and we didn't expect to reach it.
Yes, we did. Shut up.
Eventually, maybe. Not so fast.
Oh, so I got the go-ahead to start getting Patreons the Brainstorm Brewery pint glasses.
Once
we figure out at what level we're going to do that and how many we're going to send out, we're going to start doing that. So
I hope those are awesome.
I hope we have your mailing addresses.
We can get them.
Yeah, so I'm going to figure
out. That'll be cool.
I'm going to figure out how many that it's fair to send those out. I think we'll sell those eventually, but I think we'll give the Patreons a head start because why not? They deserve it.
Yeah.
So there's still time to sign up before I get my shit together and get those out.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. This is Brainstorm Brewery, and we will see you guys next week.